there's a term for it.
Yeah, there's a term for it. It's called dangerous.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 48 of The Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. As always, my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. If you've been listening for the last couple episodes, then you know that in episode 46, Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, and I discussed the notion that memory care isn't an inevitable outcome of dementia. And in last week's episode 47, we started the discussion on having memory care in your home by sharing insights from Christy's Memory Care at Home workshop. Our goal, if you choose, is to help you avoid moving your loved one into memory care by guiding you through the process of making your home what I refer to as dementia friendly. This will help you keep them home longer, safer, happier, and you will personally feel the benefit to your physical and emotional health. This week, we move our discussion to a focus on actionable things you can do to make your home dementia-friendly, and this is based on my signature course, Adapting Your Home for Dementia, where I teach students how to adapt and manage four elements of the home. These include safety, function, stimulation, and eliminating triggers which result in negative outcomes. Today's episode covers element one of the dementia-friendly home, safety. Well, hello, Christy. Welcome back to the Alzheimer's Podcast.
Wonderful to be here.
So, Christy, in episode 46, we discussed the fact that memory care isn't an inevitable outcome of dementia. And in last week's episode 47, we started a discussion on having memory care in our home by sharing some insights from your memory care at home workshop. So as you know, I also have a paid course that covers ways to modify your home's environment to make it what I refer to as dementia friendly. In that course, I dive into four elements of a dementia friendly home, and these include safety, function, stimulation, and eliminating triggers that cause what are commonly referred to as behaviors, but as we like to say, is truly communication. So today we're going to start the discussion by talking on the first element, safety. Does that sound good to you?
Sounds great.
I'm looking forward to hearing your insights and knowledge from your experiences on safety, you know, because home safety, it's such a broad topic. Because it can cover everything from, you know, fire safety to natural disaster preparedness, depending on where you live, or you have a focus on normal aging issues, right? But just to be clear, our main focus here is going to be focusing on dementia and the related cognitive challenges one faces.
Regarding safety?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, okay.
Christy, what I tell my listeners and my students is that safety, not only obviously it protects our loved ones and people from injury, but it also promotes, when the home's set up in a safe way, it helps promote their independence and individualism because they're allowed to continue to do things that they normally would do. But it also helps the family members have peace of mind. And I think that lack of peace of mind is something that really weighs on our care partners out there. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's really tough to be relaxed and have a good day when you're constantly worried about, is my person okay? Or is there something I forgot to put away? Or, you know, are they answering the door, or, you know, to somebody who shouldn't be there? It is just like with anything in life, you know, when you're worried, it's just, you don't really have any quality of life, right?
Exactly. So the goal with this is to bring that peace of mind and know that not only they're safe, but they're able to enjoy themselves in the house and have purpose, you know, and obviously safety is you know, probably the most important aspect. And I know you've said many times that, you know, safety is always top of the list. When the resident has special or unique needs such as dementia, it goes well beyond just a working smoke detector and a deadbolt on the door, right? There's a lot of things.
Sure.
There are a lot of things that a memory care community has in place that we probably don't even see, and we kind of take for granted. And we want to help our care partners bring some of those things into the house. You know, and that includes, you know, not only addressing physical things, which I want to get into, but it also starts with just being prepared, because the longer you're at home, and most of us care partners aren't spring chickens ourselves, right? Well, I'm not a care partner, but we're not spring chickens. So we're having our own issues in our homes, probably. You know, maybe we're tripping more or having trouble seeing things. So everything we talk about is really about the care partnership, and that's the caregiver and the person with dementia. But it starts with being prepared in case an accident does happen. And I want to discuss a couple of things I share with my students about being prepared, if that sounds good with you.
Sounds great.
So, you know, as the disease progresses and the risks increase, you know, what we want to avoid is panic and chaos.
Those are good things to avoid in life, period.
Right. And because in preparation, it can really be the difference between a good outcome and a bad outcome.
I believe that with my whole heart. I was a Girl Scout.
Right, right. And one of the things we're always trying to help our care partners learn and understand is that they have to have people helping them. They need support. They need to be able to get away and have their own respite. And that means turning the care over to someone else. And preparation involves, you know, having stuff ready for them. And where I'm heading with this is that there's important medical information that needs to, in my opinion, should be completed and displayed in the home so that anybody that's caring for a loved one with dementia has access to it and can take the right course of action. And I talk about a medical summary and a medical action plan. And if you don't mind, I'm going to talk about those, and you're going to tell me if those make sense or not.
Okay.
Because...
Are we doing a product review episode?
Not really, but what's happening is when, you know, since I've never been the care partner for someone with dementia, I spent thousands of hours of research, like I did have a loved one with dementia. And I kept trying to come up with ways to put together a system that would empower people to have a safe home. And I kept falling short on finding any resources out there that really spelled it out. So I'm looking, guess, for validation from you, the expert, that what I'm saying here makes sense. So I'm recommending that our care partners put together what's called a medical summary. And this purpose of this medical summary is that it communicates important medical information to anyone. And that empowers them to provide the best medical care possible, because the person with dementia may not be able to communicate their medical needs. And this includes things like your loved one's medical condition, dementia is not the only thing that people typically have as we grow older. We all have our different conditions that have to be monitored. And then also with that is including a document for the whatever medications a loved one is on. Does that sound like that's something that people should have?
Oh, it's always a good idea to make sure that that information is readily available, because as I'm sure, you know, we've talked about a bazillion times, respite care is really important, right? And so, and you don't know what's going to happen to you as a primary care partner. So making sure that that information is on hand is such a smart idea.
I have all these forms for people, because I know people are like, oh, where do I get the forms? How do I do them? So I have all these forms available at Together in This, and I'll provide links to that. And at times I couldn't find forms that I thought were adequate. I actually created forms. I'll definitely be able to share a lot of this with our listeners if people are interested. And, you know, and I know, like you've said before, this all sounds like, you know, overwhelming, but it's the same thing where we want to do a little each day and, you know, eat that airplane, as you said, a little one bite at a time, right?
So that's right.
So the medical summary, again, it just lists out key things about a person's medical situation. In the medicine record, basically you list out the different types of medications, dosages, when people are supposed to use it. Those forms you can find fairly easy out there. But the medical action plan was something that I saw it had been created for more for like people who had autism. Because if you notice that parents with autism, they're a very proactive bunch of people. And they really take the bull by the horns. And so I said, wow, why isn't there one of these out there for people with dementia? And I created this form. And what it is it lists different symptoms a loved one may have and what to do in case of different levels of severity. For instance, like if you have a headache, if it's a minor headache, you know, you just want the loved one to sit down and relax and take some time. If it's a mild headache, maybe you can give them some headache medication or consult with the doctor. If it's a severe headache, then you would, you know, call 911. And so what you do is this form walks you through to log the different types of symptoms and how someone should handle them if they're caring for your loved one. Do they have forms like that in memory care, or is everyone just so?
Yeah, what you're describing is called a care plan or a service plan, depending on the setting.
Okay.
Assisted living and some memory cares, it's called a service plan. And then in skilled nursing and some memory cares, it's called the care plan. So that's exactly what you're describing.
Okay. And that's part of the problem with the internet, right? If you don't know what words to use, you're not going to find it.
Right. And we've talked about the challenges of search words before.
Exactly. So, you know, and with all these forms, you really want to make sure you review them regularly and keep them up to date and put them in a visible place so anyone can find them, like such as the refrigerator. I recommend maybe putting it on colored paper or in a protective sleeve.
Yeah, I think a binder is great. Like home care agencies typically will use a binder that has the service plan in it. So it can be put out of the way if somebody is maybe at a point in the condition where they're a little bit suspicious of people and you need to build trust. And so at that point, it maybe not be appropriate to have it out in plain view, like on the fridge.
Okay.
And also, if everybody in the family or any respite providers know where it is, then perfect. Like, okay, it's in this central location, and so everybody can find what they're looking for.
That's good advice. Okay. Any other thoughts on maybe some forms that care partners should have in their home?
Well, a pulsed, and that's always appropriate to go on the refrigerator. So that was actually started here in Oregon about, I want to say 15 years ago.
Okay.
And that stands for Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment.
All right.
And that is on a hot pink piece of cardstock. And it's like an advance directive, or sometimes referred to as a code status. And so it tells first responders, like, if somebody's heart has stopped, if their respirations have stopped, do you want the first responders to try to bring them back to life? Okay. Do you want them to try to resuscitate them? If there's a really severe infection, do you want to go with oral antibiotics? Okay. Well, what about if antibiotics need to be administered through a shot into the muscle? What about if antibiotics need to be administered via IV? So it gives you different scenarios that you can say yes or no to. And then a physician signs it. That's the big difference. And it goes with you wherever you go. So first responders come into the home. The first place they look is on the fridge, which is why they want you to post it on the fridge. They look for it there. They have instructions to follow, medical orders, and then that goes with the person as they're transported to the hospital. So that's a big one.
Yeah, I do remember that. And I think that's where I got the colored paper idea.
Yeah, there you go.
I do have one sitting right near my desk, I'm pretty sure. So, all right. Well, other outside of the forms and documenting things, other things I recommend for being prepared are stuff we kind of think of for normal safety, you know, things like flashlights with rechargeable batteries, weather radios. And I know people are probably thinking, well, you know, we're talking dementia, right? But you still want to get some of these easier things into place, and fire extinguishers, because, you know, when judgment's impaired, and first aid kits, maybe even an extra set of car keys in case they get misplaced in the freezer or someplace we're not used to finding them. I also recommend having a recent picture of your loved one available.
Absolutely. So you always want to have a recent picture. And if you have registered your person and yourself, I hope, in the Alzheimer's Association's Safe Return Program, you're going to need that picture to be uploaded into that file anyway. So these are, you know, Mike made a great point at the beginning of, you know, oh, it seems so overwhelming. Don't let it overwhelm you. It's going to be more overwhelming to clean up a mess. So these are great ideas to get going on if you haven't done that yet.
And it's all an ongoing thing. You know, we're always trying to be prepared. But we also, at the same time, we want to be taking some steps to change things that may, we want to prevent issues before they happen. And to do that, I recommend people use observation and a knowledge of the disease to help identify and anticipate what might occur. And the more you learn about dementia and you start to understand, then you can anticipate and hopefully, you know, make these changes. In the beginning, when the abilities are, you know, when we're in the earlier stages, there's just simple things that can be done, right? Like move and throw rugs or putting medications away. But as abilities decrease, then modifications become more extensive and potentially costly. We're going to see physical decline in our loved ones that affects like their balance. They may be shuffling their feet. And, you know, we've talked about risk of falls in the past on this show. So I think we've kind of covered that. And, you know, that's back to the simply, but, you know, removing trip hazards such as throw rugs, or maybe getting thresholds in our homes. That's where it transitions from one flooring type to another, getting those remedied if possible. But judgment also changes, right? And our loved ones may not recognize dangers as well. What kind of safety issues, Christy, have you maybe experienced when judgment's off a little bit?
Yeah, and so I think one thing that's important to understand is there's not a maybe on judgment changing. It will change, okay, and it will become very poor. And that might even be one of the first signs that you notice before you notice any memory loss. So with judgment, like I tell this story a lot, so forgive me if I've already told it here on the pod, but I had a client who lived in a rural area, and how I ended up called into the situation was her granddaughter had gone over to visit and help pay the bills. And she noticed that her grandma had written a check for $1,300. And she asked her about it, you know, who's this check to? I don't recognize this name. And the lady said, well, it was for this a side of beef. And she said, where'd you get a side of beef? You don't drive. How, you know, I take you to the grocery store. What happened? Oh, this man came to the door and he was selling sides of beef and it was a really good deal. And so her granddaughter said, oh, really? Can you show it to me? Oh, yeah, it's in the deep freeze. It was about $300 worth of ground beef. So she did get something for it.
Right.
Blessedly, nothing was missing from the home. She was not assaulted. There were no, you know, and her granddaughter took her to the hospital for a rape kit and all of that to make sure.
Mm.
And so that obviously could have had an even worse outcome than just being swindled out of $1,000. That's the type of thing, though, that I'm talking about with judgment. You know, if you live in a rural area, there shouldn't be an unannounced visitor coming to your door, right? And if there is, you need to recognize that person. If you don't, you don't let them in. And that's, you know, you certainly don't write them a check for $1,300. You don't let them into your house. Those are the types of things with judgment where it's just kind of one tiny thing of just opening the door, and that can lead to all kinds of bad outcomes. So judgment is really important. You know, your job, I mean, we're talking safety, right? So as that primary care partner, your job is to ensure your person's safety. Like, that is your number one job. We can talk about happiness and quality of life, and I love those topics. I'm passionate about them. But if your person's not safe, you don't have any opportunity to provide quality of life or make every day awesome.
Another place that I've seen judgment come up, especially with men, it seems we want to try to fix things. And oftentimes the men, for some reason, want to cut through live electrical cables while they're trying to fix the radio that doesn't really need fixing, or the computer. I was able to help a care partner fix her computer, but I had to replace a couple of cables where he had cut through them. So that, those kind of things. And it's, you know, it's back to observing how they're interacting with their environment and what they're doing, and trying to remove the things or replace them with something else that's more safe, right? So we have dangers all through the house. So what I recommend to people is, you know, keep a notebook. I don't think that's a surprise that that's a recommendation, but keep a notebook and log things, and you'll see, you know, how do they interact with the environment, and how are they getting into danger? And there's different things, right? There's like the disease itself, but then things in the environment. And sometimes maybe they're just bored. I think a lot of people get in trouble, quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes, because they're because they're bored.
Yeah. So boredom is definitely our enemy. And the other thing that it's really important that care partners wrap their head around is it's a truism with dementia that as soon as you identify whatever issue or thing needs a solution or an adaptation or a fix, as soon as you get your arms wrapped around that, something changes.
Exactly.
And that is just how it goes, unfortunately. So be on the lookout for any subtle changes, and to track those in a notebook the way that you said. I think care partners are surprised when they go back and look, when they've been tracking in a notebook and they go back and look and go, oh, I didn't really notice that, but now that I'm reading it, now I see a pattern.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so valuable.
Exactly. I've had to do that for the care of my pets, and it, I mean, while that's minor in comparison, I've had that epiphany a couple of times, and it's really eye-opener. So as we go through the house, you know, I want to remind our listeners that we're not talking just the indoors. You know, we're huge advocates of the outdoors too. So we want to go through our home, and I have, you know, worksheets for assessing your home room by room and help you to understand what you're seeing. But we want to look at the indoor areas as well as the outdoor areas, and because we want to promote outdoor activities as well. But in the home, for instance, I'm just going to cover some quick things to be thinking about. So inadequate lighting, I think that's something that comes up pretty much for all of us in our 40s, where it gets harder to read. We need brighter light to see things, especially the print on labels and those kind of things. But inadequate lighting also, if you have stairways, you can add lighting to with occupancy sensors or motion sensors to help navigate, because then we can light up the stairs at night or in other dark areas of the home. We've talked about trip and slip hazards. Christy, what about the consumption of non-edibles? I know there's a term for it, but people need to observe if their loved one maybe is trying to eat things they shouldn't be eating.
Yeah, there's a term for it. It's called dangerous.
I like that. So, for a good one.
I've had this happen actually with a resident, and luckily just one, because that was my little lesson of pay very close attention. But and her family was just as stunned. Her violets were her favorite flower, and so family brought in a little potted violet and she ate it.
Oh no. Okay.
And you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
So just look up the plants that you have around the house. Make sure that they are edible, that they're okay. And if you have pets, then you probably already have done this, so you're a step ahead there. But, you know, in general, if it's not good for pets, it's not going to be okay for your person. And then you want to make sure that your chemicals are locked away, your household cleaners. And I don't see this so much anymore, but it used to be pretty popular when I was a kid to have bowls of like plastic fruit.
Right.
If you have those, ditch those because it looks like food. So it's a reasonable assumption somebody's going to eat that. Likewise, a bowl of potpourri chips. Like I used to have those laying out and I have a dog who's like, delicious. So those are gone. You know, things like that. Just kind of take a look around. And a good rule of thumb is, you know, would I have this out with my grandbabies?
Right,
you know, with,
right.
with a, like a 2-year-old toddler that is ready to explore the world and, you know, how do they explore the world through touching and putting things in their mouth? Right. So if that wouldn't be a good idea, good rule is it's not a good idea for your person either.
And that goes into also other things like dangerous appliances or tools, knives,
space heaters,
blenders, maybe the garbage disposal. You know, and dangerous access to dangerous areas of the home. Maybe your garage or your basement has things that you haven't had time to put away. But as we start to wrap up already.
Wow.
What I like to remind people is that you want to try to avoid this all or nothing approach is what I call it. So if dad is wanting to go down in the basement because he's gone down in the basement for the last 20 or 30 years, by prohibiting him, you're going to do what I call a trigger, and you're going to trigger a reaction. So we want to, you know, if that's something he's really wanting to do, then I highly recommend you take steps to make it a safe thing for him to do.
Oh, for sure, because nobody likes to hear the word no.
Right.
At all. And as far as like not having the time to do things, one of the things that I always remind families of, because I do hear that a lot and I appreciate, you know, time is valuable. If you feel like you don't have the time to implement some safety measures now, just imagine how pressed for time you're going to feel when you're sitting there in the ER cooling your heels, waiting for your person to be treated.
Exactly.
Stuff happens. It really does. I'm not saying this to be ugly. I'm just saying it as the voice of experience. Stuff happens. Invest a little bit of time now for a huge payoff down the road.
Get you a notebook. Go through each room of your house. Look and take observations. Try to, you know, do a little bit at a time. If your loved one's early into the disease, then start doing the simple things now. If it's, you know, getting further down the road and you really want to keep your loved one at home, then you can balance or weigh the cost of having your home maybe modified by a professional to maybe say you want to put in a curbless shower, I think they're called. You can compare that to the cost of memory care and see where you want to come out with that, because memory care is obviously not an inexpensive route. I have, there's a lot to cover here. I'm shocked that we only got through about half the information. I'm not really shocked, but we only got through about half the information I thought maybe we would get to today.
Wow.
Because it's a big topic, right? Safety's huge.
Yeah, it is a big topic, and I didn't even feel like I talked too much, so gosh, yeah, there's a lot to it.
You know, it's something to take real serious, and I have a resource page on my website I'll provide a link to that has articles and resources and a prior training to help you, our listener, if you want to learn more about bringing safety into your home. And Christy, do you have any other, you know, final thoughts about safety in the home before we wrap up?
Yeah, check out the resource that Mike's providing, because the, you know, it's important. Really, safety is the number one thing. Without that, it's just one bad outcome after another. So.
Okay, well, Christy, I appreciate you joining me again. And next week, we're going to talk about element 2 of the dementia-friendly home, and that's function. It's the home's ability to meet your needs.
So we're not talking feng shui?
Not feng shui, but function.
Oh, come on. Okay.
All righty. Well, bye-bye now.
Bye.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Adapting your home for dementia and making it dementia-friendly is a lot of work, but by taking incremental steps each day, you can keep your loved one home longer, safer, and happier. Be sure to check out the episode page at togetherinthis.com/episode48, where you'll find links to resources and a link to the Adapting Your Home for Dementia course that will help you be successful. Thank you, and I look forward to sharing more with you next week when Christy and I discuss function in the home. Bye now. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherinthis. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.